Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Now, we often hear President Ramaphosa talk about the fact that South Africa is a developmental state and aspires to ever being one, and seemingly that this should be good policy for the development of essentially money into the coffers of the state for the use in improving infrastructure, etc., for our benefit. But although it came up and came up at the G20, and as did a lot of comment from the president, that you know the G20 and the Western world in general must help South Africa and African countries in general to get themselves out of high levels of foreign debt, and in other words, and help in many ways to develop South Africa as a country. One has to ask, well, what exactly is meant by a developmental state, and is it a good thing? And if it's not a good thing, why is it not a good thing? And to this end, I have asked Zakhele Ntembu, the policy officer at the Freed Market Foundation, to talk to us about it. He did a podcast, an interview on it recently. And Zakhele, welcome back to Chai FM, and your feelings on what is a developmental state? What makes it a specific modus of manner in which a state should be run? And is it a good thing?
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me back. You know, I like being here. I've done quite a few interviews here, so you know, I enjoy coming to have a chat. And regarding the developmental state, right? Why is it favored? I think the cynic in me, who is super distrustful of politicians, would be like, because it is the one developmental model that just gives them all the power, puts them right in the center of wealth generation, wealth creation, in whatever jurisdiction that a politician may be governing in. And as such, this would explain why it is favored so much, right? But the conversation itself is much more broader, because it comes from a certain understanding of economics, right? Of like understanding the creation of prosperity and wealth as being contingent on the state. Now, this is something that I disagree with, but fundamentally, that's what developmental statism, if we were to call it that, is, right? You need the state in order to create wealth in society. You need the state to be heavily involved in the economic affairs of the country, investing, as they would call it, in infrastructure, spending a whole lot of money. And that is the important part, the expenditure part, because in every case of developmental statism, the implication is that the tax revenue that a particular jurisdiction is able to raise would not be enough, necessitating debt from international finance institutions, and that debt is good, that debt is welcomed. You should get that debt and settle future generations of your citizens with paying for something that they haven't even used as of yet, because, well, the state needs to be investing in the economy. And this is something that we see the South African government is a huge fan of, right? So that's why they come up with all of these plans, these grand plans for our economy that, of course, never come to fruition, because, well, you cannot plan an economy for over millions of people. And I don't think politicians tend to understand that. But yeah, developmental statism most likely favored because it gives politicians all the power.
Well, you've alluded to it in the sense that it basically ensures that the state has more and more control over, theoretically, over what money comes in and what money it has access to. But we look over the last 30 years, and certainly it's after the first 10 years where we did see the economy grow at one point, you know, over a two-year period, I think it was 2006 or 7 or 8, by 5%. The South African economy has just deteriorated. It has not grown, and yet at every available opportunity, the ANC seems to hold by the position that it must be the fundamental driver of how the economy operates and what money it earns. What, and they're busy having the end of year serious conference, you know, looking inwardly at how they're doing and what they're doing, and the omens are not good. I mean, they've not done well in by-elections recently at all. What should the role of the state be limited to in order for individuals to run their own affairs and to create and respond to economy on a supply and demand basis? What should they be doing, or what should they be limited to be doing?
Ah, yeah, I think that's a great question, since I always mention it in my videos or in my writing, right, that the state should be limited to protecting life, liberty, and property. As general as that may seem, but that is what the role of the state should be. The state should be protecting your life if it is in danger or it is under threat, should be protecting your property, because that is what you use to trade. That is the basis of any economic activity. So a strong property rights is a fundamental need before any form of prosperity, any form of economic change can happen. And of course, protecting your liberty, because you need that in order to do everything else, right? So I think the state should be limited in that, instead of trying to devise these grand plans. As you said, the last time we had above 1% economic growth was during Mbeki's presidency. And even then you could say that was, influenced in part by, global happenings, because the entire global economy was in a bubble. But still, we'll give, credit to that part, of the administration. But ever since then, right, the state has grown. Well, I guess in South Africa's history, the state has always involved itself in anything other than the protection of life, liberty, and property. But that is what it should be limited to. Give people the liberty to trade within themselves, ensure that the things that they trade with themselves are protected, so that, they cannot be stolen from them, or they cannot be, taken from them in most cases than not by the state, and ensure that everyone in your country, every citizen in your jurisdiction is able, has the freedom to trade and pursue whatever opportunity that they may see. Because as you implied, the only way to respond to the economic malaise that we're stuck in is just by giving people the latitude to respond to that, by the latitude to devise solutions for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a great thing about free markets and free enterprising, is that really it just is contingent on giving people the freedom to figure it out by themselves. And in most cases than not, humans are ingenious. They will figure it out.
I mean, certainly, I think what the state seems, for whatever reasons, and we'll look at those more specifically, but for whatever reasons, the state may feel that it needs to be the engine behind economic growth and be in control of the country's finances. There seems to be and I don't know if this is an ideological thing that's linked to socialist ideology, or whether it's just an arrogance, but there seems to be a failure to understand, and perhaps it's because politicians generally have had very poor or very little experience in the business world, to appreciate that individuals, hundreds of thousands, millions of them, have agency. We have the agency to pursue our economic interests to the extent that we are either equipped to, for better or for worse, or have an innate talent for doing so. So whether it be working for large companies that already exist, or whether it has the entrepreneurial spirit to start companies that could become larger in due course, those are the sort of elements of individual agency that the governments seem to have very little regard for. And isn't it a sort of a kind of patronizing attitude towards
it? Definitely is patronizing, to say the least, right? It is, to quote Thomas Sowell, has this amazing book, Thomas Sowell, called The Visions of the Anointed. I call them the anointed, the politicians. They think of themselves as being anointed, as being above everyone else. That is why they think they are justified in eliminating that agency from people, as you have said, because state intervention and state planning in the economy presumes that whatever it is that individuals are doing when the state is not involved is not good enough. Mm-hmm. And as such, but the state cannot act. The state is not a body. The state is staffed with individuals just like you and me. And those individuals, why should their agency, why should their understanding of whatever it is that they're supposed to do override my own, right? And this is the great thing about liberty, because it gives everyone the power to just figure it out by themselves. And the state, the politicians, thinking themselves as being, anointed, as being above everyone, they think that they can eliminate the agency. Well, in reality, they do, right? Through various means, of course. We can spend the whole day talking about all the ways the state, inhibits liberty. But primarily concerning economic matters, it seems that the incentive, right? If we were to look at the South African state as an example, right? Politicians do this insidious thing of eliminating agency, one, you would say that, well, they are malicious. I'd be like, of course, well, the consequences are malicious, or but the intention itself, you would say the self-interest, right? Everyone has self-interest. Everyone is driven by self-interest. And as I said earlier on, when you have the power to determine the course of destiny for other people, but most importantly, to benefit from the determination of that course of destiny, as we are seeing through like the various commissions of inquiries we always have in the country into how like corrupt our politicians are, right? And I'm like, that is why you have to limit the state. But these people are self-interested. They want the power. They want the benefits of running people's lives. And really, I guess, unfortunately, right, this is not a uniquely South African problem. It's just that we have it to a much more, you know, horrible degree, for lack of a better term.
Well, it does seem, you pointed out in your podcast, that it does seem to be a problem with many African countries.
That's true, yes.
Could that be down to the fact that sort of when much of Africa became decolonized, they tended to, and both during and during the Cold War, they became decolonized, but they also tended to be satellites to the Soviet Union. So there tends to be a hangover of that sort of statist element, or is it just that having seen what power accrues with running an economy, it was an obvious source to gain advantage, and a lot of advantage would have been through corruption?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of both, right? I think both things had an influence. Definitely, you know, the 20th century, the Cold War period, right? A lot of African states were satellite states of the USSR, right? But you would find that even African states that weren't satellite states of the USSR, like I think Cote d'Ivoire, right? They still struggle with these problems of, like, you know, corruption that is pretty much endemic in every government institution. So I think it is also in part due to, you know, South Africa is filled with Westphalian states that were in large parts implemented by, you know, colonial authorities. And the way the African state was constructed was in a very extractive manner. Maybe you could say outside with the exception of South Africa, because South Africa had, you know, a settled population, and as such, maybe the state structure had necessitated to be different. But, you know, maybe the understanding, as you said, the seeing that state power brings with it a whole lot of economic power for whatever group controls said state, you know, that may have contributed to, I guess, the problems that with endemic corruption that we do have. But, you know, in my writing and my commentary in general, I always try to preach the reason I'm a proponent of liberty is because it gives one the agency and the responsibility to be in true control of their destiny. So I think that the blame really for Africa's corruption lies with the people who live in Africa, African leaders, the people who vote for those African leaders, if they are allowed to vote, and the people who support them in whatever capacity, right? Like, the blame lies with Africans themselves, because they are the ones who suffer from these corrupt regimes. So irrespective of whatever may have been an influence, right, be it the US, be it the influence of the socialist ideology, or the influence of the type of statehood that you had, or the history of seeing the power that said statehood represents, that is not an excuse for having the form of, you know, corruption that we do have, because ultimately, you like, there's no way to change it, right? Identifying whatever may have affected it does not help in changing it, but instead identifying that we do have the power to change it, since we are the ones responsible for putting those people in power, at the very least supporting them in some capacity, I think that is much more important to at least, you know, acknowledge.
Now, you talked about the sort of the basics that a state should provide and then pretty much get out of the way, being to protect society, to protect society, perhaps to provide for a public education system to ensure that as many people get a decent education within boundaries as possible. What about... And of course, they can't possibly know what the sheer scope of business of economic activity can be. It's best left to individuals and in the private sector to identify those opportunities. What does one argue? What role should the state play in providing the sort of infrastructure that we all need in order to make our exercise our individual agency. In other words, roads, railways, systems like that. Is it a state-only function, or is it something in fact that the state can identify but should execute with the assistance of a vibrant private sector?
Yeah, I mean, I am pretty much biased, right? I am as libertarian as they come. So I would between those options, opt for the option whereby there is private sector involvement in that. But I'm very skeptical of private-public partnerships because I think they're a vehicle for, you know, state patronage and corruption. So I tend to look at them with a very so-and-so eye. But any involvement in the private sector when it comes to administration of, you know, state services usually leads to, you know, those services costing less to the taxpayer. And I always want the taxpayer to not pay as much for things. But I think, you know, as I said, I am biased. I'm a libertarian who does not believe that at least public education should be structured in such a way. Maybe we have a voucher system, and then from there we can start working. But I think the role that the government can play, you know, the private sector is already playing this role. I always say this in South Africa, we are seeing certain elements of the state's collapse, for lack of a better term. So that has necessitated our private sector to be very proactive in ensuring that their continued existence is a reality. And that is why you have, you know, I think our ports, there's already a public-private partnerships concerning some parts of the ports and the railway infrastructure. And beyond a actual public-private partnerships in South Africa, you have a lot of, you know, just private companies taking over what ought to be state services, or at the very least working with the state. In Johannesburg, we have the whole Discovery Pothole initiative, where a private insurer, right, saw it with themselves, with all the taxes we pay on top of the taxes we pay. Our insurance companies are also seeing it as part of their job to fix our roads. So I think that would be the better option, right? Our state has shown itself, at least currently under its current administrators, that it is incapable of doing a whole lot of things that we would consider basic. Mm. And as such, if they can get help from the private sector, which, you know, for all its faults, the South African private sector, and by its faults, I mean lobbying for more regulations. But for all of those faults, they are quite competent. They are very good. They are the reason South Africa has not, you know, gotten as worse as it could have, because we have a pretty vibrant private sector that is committed to, you know, really identifying the principle of operating in a capitalist economy, which is serving your customers. So, yeah, I would prefer the option of the private sector partnership.
I mean, you can see it in a way in the mining industry, where mines tend to create an infrastructure, a whole array of infrastructure in the environment around which they operate, which end up to being to the benefit of the mines and to those who serve the mines and to those who live within mining areas. Finally, Zakhele, what about just the uniformly unlocking the right of people to own their own property, instead of having a situation where parts of society have pay bonds, buy houses, have that as an asset to use against economic activity, and yet others cannot. The houses in the ownership of the state and really need to be released and unlocked, and you actually have to trust people to take the value of those houses and to be able to sell them or not as they choose to, in order to grow the economy.
Yeah, that is integral, right? Like, as I mentioned, property is what makes everything else possible. But in this case, landed property, right? In South Africa, it has such a history too, because it is associated with a whole lot of, you know, injustice in our past, our government. So you would think that our current government would be committed to giving as many people as it possibly can the power to own their houses, right? That's why the Free Market Foundation has initiatives like Kaya Lamu, which actually does do that, which, you know, is something that I am proud to even work for an organization that does something like that. But it is pretty integral. It is super integral for people to own their houses. You say that it creates this bifurcation in society, whereby you have a certain sector of society that is able to leverage whatever capital assets that they do have for greater economic activity, whilst others, even though in reality, in use, they do have these assets, they are unable to leverage them. That's why you have this, you know, formal informal economy, and this set of bifurcation in terms of economic activity in South Africa, which overall, you know, disadvantages us because we have millions and millions of people who could be using those assets if they actually own them for whatever it is that they think is best, that that people need around them, right? So it is an integral part, right? It is integral for any economic recovery plan in South Africa to happen, right? The millions of people who live in townships and everything like that, they have to have the ability to own their property.
Right. Well, let's say from your lips to the ears of the ANC, who are busy contemplating why things are not going the way they should. Zakhele, thank you very much for joining us once again on Chai FM.
Thank you for having me, sir.